Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Property and Local Tax Division to order. We're going to diverge slightly from the agenda as printed. Ms. Schill, for members, has placed in your packets a spreadsheet and wants to walk us through some of the changes that you'll see based on the February budget forecast. Ms. Schill, if you can help us out here, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. In your packet, you'll find a two-page spreadsheet on legal size paper. It basically gives you a comparison of the November forecast to the February forecast. And what's important to note here, on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see some columns in white, no shading, that'll identify the differences between November and February for fiscal years 12 and 13, fiscal years 14 and 15, and then 16 and 17. And that's really what I wanted to draw your attention to. There are changes in accounts that affect this committee. And what is important to note, the very first line, and I apologize, spreadsheet example does not have numbers on the left-hand side so you can see the line, so I'll just have to do my best to explain. But the very first one is the homeowner property tax refund. And you can note the changes here for the homeowner's property tax refund. It's about $14 million lower in each year starting with fiscal 13. And so you see the ripple effects of that lowering in the forecast through fiscal 14 and 15 and 16 and 17. That's important. Apparently, and I talked with Department of Revenue on this, that the number of claims for homeowner PTR came in lower than expected. Similarly, the second line below that, not the change item, but the renter's property tax refund, you'll see a similar change but in the opposite direction. In fiscal 13, there's an increase of about $900,000, and then each year thereafter is about a million dollar increase. And so for fiscal 14 and 15, for example, it's just shy of $12 million, and 16 and 17, just over $12 million. And what that is reflecting is an uptick in the number of filers for renter PTR. And so you can see the shift from home ownership into renting. And you'll also see that impact on the very bottom of the first sheet with the agricultural market value credit. There is a lower amount there once again because of a reduced amount of ownership. So that is important as we talk about changes to the PTR, both renter credit and homeowner PTR. There are a number of smaller changes along the way, but the other one that I would draw your attention to is on the second page, about midway. It's the first line located, if you look for the title, Local Pension Aids, the first line beneath that is Aid to Police and Fire. And you will see, especially in fiscal 14 and 15 and 16 and 17, an increase of about $1.2 million per biennium. And that is accountable. Okay, as we do aid to police and fire, and we'll be talking about this issue in the near future, those pension aids are really, they derive from a surcharge on both fire insurance and car insurance, and this increase shows an increase in the premium, so there is more money available to pay those pension aids. The second thing of note is that there is a subcategory under here, it doesn't show up on the spreadsheet, but there is a special surcharge for first class cities. And in the past, our first class cities have been St. Paul and Minneapolis, and in fiscal 14 is when Rochester comes on board. And so there's an uptick in the base, and it's starting to show up in the forecast. Other items, there are smaller changes, but those are the ones I particularly wanted to share some information on.
Thank you, Ms. Schill. Any questions from members? Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you mentioned an increase in renters' property tax refund, you mentioned that it was because of increased numbers of applications. Is that also partly attributable to increased rents? I think it's based on percentage of rent, so is that part of the formula as well?
Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertop, likely so, yes. I just basically conveyed to you some of the reasoning that Department of Revenue gave to me.
Thank you.
And we didn't go any further than that, but that is very logical, and I would assume that that would be part of that increase also.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. And do we track what the median rent is just with regard to that program?
Ms. Schill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertox, yes, in especially when we do sample calculations of how a change in renter's credit would happen, yes, because it's included in one of the lines there and median rents and where it's located. In fact, I can probably supply the committee with one of those examples next time we meet.
That'd be excellent.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Hertas?
Thank you. Yeah, that would be helpful because Representative Dabney had a bill about that, and that would probably shed some light on that, mm-hmm. too.
Very good. Any other questions from members regarding the spreadsheet and Ms. Shields' walkthrough? All right. Seeing none. Representative Purcell, let's talk taxes.
I guess I'm in the right committee, Mr. Chair.
I believe you are, Representative Purcell. Representative Lean, would you like to move House File 1037 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, or in the division report, excuse me?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lean. Representative Purcell, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 1037 is a bill that brought to me by City of Bemidji looking for a local sales tax authorization, and I won't read every bit of it by any means, but you can see the sections there dealing with the food and beverage tax and the lodging tax and subdivision 2, and then going on to talk about proceeds and authorized uses and subdivision 4, the administration enforcement, pretty standard language. And I have with me today the Bemidji City Manager, Mr. John Chatton, and he was going to say a few words about the bill.
Mr. Chatton, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, representatives. Happy to be here. My name is John Chatton. I'm the City Manager of Bemidji. First of all, I would like to thank the legislature for the bonding money that the city got several years ago to help build the event center, and after that we also got extension of a half-cent sales tax to help pay for bonded indebtedness on that facility. So the legislature has been key in helping to establish our regional facility. Our event center saw over 130,000 people come to Bemidji last year to attend different events there. That's 10 times our population. So it truly is a regional asset. And it also brings a lot of extra money into the community, which is one of the reasons we wanted to build it in the first place. A lot of that money gets spent in local hotels and restaurants. If any of you have ever been in Bemidji on a Friday or Saturday night when there's a home hockey game, you will not get into a restaurant unless you're there by 4:30, 5 o'clock, and you probably will have to stay 20 miles away to get a hotel room. It is very, very busy, which is exactly what we were hoping for. One thing I must note, though, I mean, although most of our community now embraces the event center, the original referendum passed by just a handful of votes. And one of the reasons was that residents were worried about potential tax burden of deficits for the facility. Bemidji has 51% of its tax capacity is tax exempt. I think there may be one or two cities in the state that are higher than that because they have generation facilities, but beyond that, we are probably the highest in tax-exempt property in the state. So we have 49% of our property is trying to pay to subsidize the event center. Basically, a very small portion of the population. And that was one of the reasons that some people were against it in the first place. This bill is designed to relieve that burden. It is designed to put up to a 1% tax. I would like to compare it to the Mankato tax, where they have a half cent tax currently, even though they're authorized up to 1%. It's designed to relieve that burden, and currently we subsidize the event center to the tune of just under $400,000 a year for the last 2 years. The hospitality tax, as proposed, would generate approximately $500,000 a year. So the reality is we probably would not need to implement a full 1%. The other piece to this is, if this bill were passed, it would allow us to reduce our city tax levy by 10.3%. That obviously would benefit all our residents. And as the city portion of the tax is only a piece of it, total property tax bills would see approximately 3.8% reduction over what would otherwise be needed in a levy to operate the city. I guess in conclusion, I'd say the bill is good for Bemidji and our regional community, and our city council is unanimous in its support for the bill. And I really appreciate you hearing me today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chetnin. A quick question here. I always get a little nervous around the word notwithstanding. And both on page 1, line 6, and again 1.12, we're notwithstanding any ordinance, city charter, or other provision of law. I won't hold you responsible for state law, but I will city ordinance or charter. What are we notwithstanding there in both those situations?
I believe the notwithstanding refers to the current 3% lodging tax that goes to Visit Bemidji. So this would be a separate 1% outside of that.
All right. Ms. Dalton, can you assist here, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, actually this is just standard language because I have not read all city charters.
Good choice on your part.
And so this is the standard language that we use when we are doing these, just in case there's something in a city charter that they haven't told me about.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chetnin, and thank you, Ms. Dalton. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chatham. If I understood you correctly, you right now are using your half-cent sales tax to deal with some debt service that wasn't covered by the state bonding. Is that correct? And then because it doesn't fully cover the operational costs, you want this in addition? Is that an understanding of how those two taxes interplay?
Mr. Chapman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, yes, it would be in addition to that.
Representative Loeffler?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chatham, then, is your original sales tax, does that end at the time that debt service is paid off?
Mr. Chatham.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, that is correct.
Okay.
Representative Loeffler?
Thank you. And just to, so I always understand this, I have learned that what one person calls a community center is, you know, kind of like what might be a Y in someone else's. And it sounds like this is more like a convention. Your center is a convention center that's primarily serves gatherings of people for association meetings or something. Is that a correct understanding of what the Sanford Center is?
Mr. Chatham, what do you do up there?
Mr. Chairman, representatives, The entire development that was constructed was an $80 million project, with approximately $65 million being spent on the event center and other roads, parking lots, etc., that were required for that. It is also the home for Bemidji State hockey, They are in the WCHA. They should be down here Friday night playing the Gophers again. Hopefully they do a little better this Friday than
Are you trying to get my vote on this?
Anyway, we house 4,400 for hockey. We can house 6,000 for concerts. We have an attached convention conference facility that has a 10,000 square foot ballroom and a 4,000 foot dividable lakeside conference rooms. So it's definitely a multi-purpose facility. We do anything from weddings to concerts to hockey to basketball to monster trucks.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. That helps me envision it.
Ms. Dalton. Nope. Okay. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, what are the current levels of property taxes in Bemidji compared to other cities your size in the state? Are you average, above average, below average? Where are you at compared to the average?
Mr. Chatman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faust, I wish I had brought that with me because we are much less than the average compared to others in the state, where I think we're around 41, 42 mills, something like that. We're not among the highest in the state, that's for sure.
Representative Faust.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is, if your property tax rates are below average and the 0.5% that you currently have on there is paying for this regional center that conceivably anyway people from all over the area and the state are paying for that, but it sounds like this is much more about keeping the property taxes down in your community, which are already less than average. And so I guess, you know, I don't understand why somebody from my community that goes to your community and spends money should now help pay the property tax responsibility of your community. But I guess that's just my opinion on this. So,
all right.
So thank you.
Thank you. Other questions from Mr. Chatton and from members?
May I respond, Mr.
Certainly, Mr. Chatton.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faust, I believe this is a matter of fairness. Understandably, maybe our tax rates are slightly lower than some of the other regional centers, but why should such a small portion of citizens in the city of Bemidji be subsidizing a regional center? This is not just for the citizens of Bemidji, as evidenced by the number of people that we serve, having over 130,000 people come through that center last year in a town of 13,000. We are servicing a wide region. It doesn't seem fair to take less than half the people in Bemidji or less than half the property in Bemidji and say, you have to pay all of that. That would be my point.
Representative Faust.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. But I my understanding was, as the way it was explained, is that the tax that is there is already paying for the regional center, and you yourself said that this would actually lower the tax rate on what you've got. And so I guess that I mean, maybe part of it is doing what you're doing, but you admitted that part of it is doing what I'm saying. And so it's just I don't like local option sales tax, I guess, and I've expressed that before, and so I'm expressing that again, I guess.
But before we go to Ms. Dalton, we do have quorum. I don't believe I've officially convened the committee, so there's that. Ms. Dalton, you had some information on taxes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, statewide, the equalized average city tax rate is about 45%. They tend to be higher in the outstate Minnesota than they are in the metro. But just...
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And just, Ms. Dalton, I'm trying to pull up some memory banks here from some dead brain cells a while ago, but my recollection on that report is that that region of the state has a lower percentage of their income paid in property taxes than the metro area and, I believe, southeastern Minnesota. Do you guys happen to know that off the top of your head or not? Because you're citing a capacity rate. I'm talking about percentage of, in regards to Representative Faust's point, percentage of income going to property taxes. That's my recollection. Do either of you remember that?
Mr. Hines, can you help us?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, about the only thing I can recollect is in general, Greater Minnesota had lower percentage of income in property taxes as Metro, but the specifics of even that region, I wouldn't care to speculate. I don't have that report with me.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to, I believe you mentioned this, but I remember my good friend, former Representative Moe, was a big champion of this project, and he and I were elected together. We actually still stay in touch, and he was a big advocate, huge promoter for Bemidji, and I'm trying to remember the total project numbers, and maybe you ran these through. What was the GO bonding you got? Was it 14 or 15? Or run through the numbers again.
Mr. Chetnin, do you run dog sled races at the Sanford Center?
Mm-hmm. Pardon me. Do you
go ahead and answer Representative Garofalo's question and leave mine alone.
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, we received a total of $23 million in the bonding bill from the state for the center, and the sales tax, the half-cent sales tax that was extended supports a bond issue of $44
million. Okay.
Representative Garofalo.
And just not because it's really the subject matter of whether the property taxes should be paying for the operation of the facility or the food and beverage, but just tell us a little, because I think sometimes we pass these things and we forget about it. I watched the Gophers games this weekend. I haven't been to the event center. How's it working? I mean, is it just, I mean, I know it was very controversial at the time when the ballot initiative passed, and former Representative Moe was a big advocate and a champion for it. Just kind of give us a summary of how things are working and where you envision this facility positioning the region in the future.
Mr. Chetnin.
Mr. Chairman, Representatives, I don't know that we're unlike other facilities. We've probably had a little bumpy start. We hired VenueWorks out of Ames, Iowa, to manage the facility for us. We're on our third executive director in 2 years. We believe we have an outstanding executive director now. We have a Sanford Center Advisory Board with members of the community and a couple of council members and myself and our finance director on there that oversee how things are going, and we meet every 2 weeks, and we're very encouraged by our current executive director. But I think it's been a real boon for the region. I mean, it's when Convention Sports and Leisure did the original projections for the facility, and this goes back to before my time in Bemidji, probably back to 2005 or early 2006, they thought the facility could lose as much as $700,000 a year in its first years until it leveled off and you had maybe an attached hotel and you had more events coming to the facility. Our losses, though significant, have been about half that. They've been around $370,000-$380,000 a year, and we're hoping to cut that some more. But the economic benefit to the region is certainly there.
Representative Purcell.
If I may, Mr. Chair, and Representative Garofalo, we've, and some of those things that City Manager Chetnin is talking about are starting to happen. We've got some more development going on down on that what we call the South Shore, Lake Bemidji, and some old industrial sites that are being redeveloped. And it's taken some time to redevelop those and really get folks to come in and invest, as it often is when you're redeveloping brownfield sites, et cetera. So, but it's happening. Slovacher, come on up, and Representative Loeffler, please come up and see that new event center.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Loeffler.
I was going to tell you guys, you know, Frank Moe was like the magic man down here. He walked into this place and got all this done and took off. So maybe you guys can just try to convince former Representative Moe that you guys really need his help on this project. If he can come down here and push it over the finish line, it'd just be great to see him. I know he doesn't live in the Bemidji area anymore. He's up in Representative Dill's district, but
there's enough snow for him to come down by dog sled.
That's right, absolutely.
That's what counts.
Yeah, so it'd just be great to see him. Thank you.
I will, Mr. Chair. I'll relay your remarks to him. Thank you.
Representative Hertas?
Notwithstanding any other questions.
There you go. Nicely done.
I'm sure that your event center is much larger than the city of Akeley's, but the real question is, Is your Paul Bunyan smaller than theirs?
Ooh, them's fighting words, I think.
That's a negative.
All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify regarding House File 1037? Please. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Gary Botzik representing the Convention and Visitors Bureau, so I want to talk to one of those notwithstandings, the second one. Convention and Visitors Bureaus, including Visit Bemidji, are concerned about the lodging tax for Subdivision 2. I talked to Danelle Hilliard, who's the executive director at Visit Bemidji, yesterday and again today. As you know, and these people on this side know for sure, you know, lodging tax is designed to promote visitors, conventions, etc., to cities like Bemidji so that they can make money off of those visitors. But to take that percentage and dedicate it toward debt retirement, let's say, or operation and maintenance is kind of like eating your seed corn, because you're done. You can't expand your marketing efforts. You'd be better off expanding the lodging tax from 3% to 4% to promote the area, to bring in more money to help pay the facility. But this is kind of not permissible. In fact, I don't know if it's permissible. The staff can address that. That's why the notwithstanding is in there. It's inappropriate, we would say. But one of the persons that responded to me this morning said, now I can't find my notes, but we start here. We can do ice rinks. We can do community centers. It's kind of into capitalization or capitalized buildings, and that's not what the lodging tax was designed for or is intended to use. As you know, Bloomington and Richfield and all your cities use it. There's close to 100 convention and visitors bureaus, and they're there to promote their communities. They're there to help raise revenue, to help good projects like this. But to kind of take that money and sidecar it is kind of a mistake, and we would oppose that section or that subdivision too.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Other testifiers? Mr. Vanasek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rob Vanasek. Speak on behalf of the Minnesota Lodging Association today. Apologies to the author of the bill for not catching them before the hearing, but did want to express our concerns about the use, as Mr. Botzik pointed out, the use of dollars for activities not related to marketing Minnesota's destinations. We do have a position, and we, by the way, we have heard from quite a few members over the last couple days up in Bemidji that are opposed to this bill, and you know, our position is that it's up to, you know, current law is great. We support it, that a city or town may vote to impose a tax of up to 3% on gross receipts from furnishing or consideration of lodging at a hotel, motel, etc. But this, it's clear through some attorney general rulings in the past that this money is not to be used to finance other city projects, and specifically current statute states 95% of the proceeds shall be used to fund a local convention or tourism bureau for the purpose of marketing and promoting the city or town as a tourist destination. And this would set a precedent where some other folks, if they haven't had, you know, the convention bureau and the local folks involved and supportive, they have done some other things, but there have not been too many cases where a lodging tax has been imposed and used for other purposes.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Others in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 1037? Excellent. Representative Purcell, closing comments, sir.
Just appreciate support, and thank you for hearing the bill. Appreciate being here. Renew my motion, or if you would renew my motion. Or
Representative Lean renews his motion that House File 1037 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much, Representative Purcell. Mr. Chattanooga.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. We're going to jump down now to House File 1268. Representative Sundin. Welcome to the committee, sir. You're be-buttoned.
Pardon me?
You're be-buttoned.
I'd be buttoned. By tribal high schools, I guess, Mr. Chairman.
Ah, dangerous territory. Representative Nelson, would you like to move House File 1268 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report?
Sure.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Sundin, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's pronounced Sundin.
Ah, Sundin. My apologies.
That's fine. Thank you very much. Yeah, bill number... House File 1268 in front of you. This is a request from the city of Moose Lake. And if you have the overview in front of you, Section 1, City of Moose Lake taxes authorized. Subdivision 1, sales and use. The tax authorization allows the city of Moose Lake to impose up to a half a percent sales tax. Use tax based on voter approval of the 2012 general election. The general law applies to its imposition, administration, collection, and enforcement. Subdivision 2 refers to the use of sales and use of the tax revenues. This allows the city to use revenues from the tax imposed in Subdivision 1 for improvements up to the following items: the city park system, street and related infrastructure, and the municipal library. Subdivision 3, there's a bonding authority. It allows the city to issue up to $3 million in bonds for the projects listed in Subdivision 2 without requiring an additional referendum. And there's a sunset on this, the termination of the taxes. The tax in Subdivision 1 terminates at the earlier of 20 years after its imposition, or 2, when revenues raised are sufficient to pay the $3 million in project costs plus the amount needed to cover the associated bond costs. Just to give you a little bit of a background on what's happened in Moose Lake, the devastating, there's a massive devastation of the properties in the city limits back in June of 2012, and actually 21 homes are left destroyed, and the city is realizing a $1 million loss in revenues because of the devaluation of the properties in there. They've taken it upon themselves to approve this tax and request our authorization of that so they can kind of dig themselves out of their financial distress right now. So I've spoken with the mayor of Moose Lake today. He's very, very excited to do this and seeking your approval of this measure.
All right. Do you have any testifiers, Representative Sundin?
No, I do not.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you, I think you really answered my question. I raised my hand, and then you basically answered it. But the reason for this is because of the flood that occurred in 2012. Is that correct?
Representative Sundin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Faust, yes. The city schools have been made whole in their repair efforts. Some of the businesses are left destroyed, and they will not reopen. But this is exactly what they need to do to repair their parks and some of their infrastructure upgrades.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And representing, well, now you've got me confused because, so you're saying that the money that's going to go to the city park system, the street and related infrastructure, and the municipal library are all to repair damage that was done by the floods last June or the weather last June?
I don't
Representative
know.
Sundin.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't know that for a fact, dollar per dollar, where it's going. I know the park system has been, the one park down near the lake was demolished.
Representative Loeffler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would find it useful to get that kind of information because we typically use local option sales taxes for regional facilities that, you know, benefit surrounding areas. And I'm just would like to know a little more. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Sundin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I can contact the mayor and ask for specifics and forward them to you if that's your pleasure.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 1268?
Seeing none. Any last comments?
The word notwithstanding only appears once.
And we're glad of it. Thank you, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Moving on. Representative Keel? Excellent. Can we start with House File 1027?
I would appreciate that.
Numerical order?
That would be great.
Awesome.
I really wanted to be able to present 1027 because these gentlemen came 5 hours down to see me.
So. Ah, well, I'm glad we're doing it, and well we won't get you out of here. We won't get you home before dark, but we'll let you get out of here before dark. How's that sound? Representative Keel, would you like to move your bill?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to actually move 1027. But we are going to do the DE-1 amendment.
All right. So why don't you start by moving House File 1027 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report.
Okay. Yes, I would like to move that too.
All right. And then you have the H-1027 DE-1 amendment that you'd like. This is author's amendment to put the bill in the form that you prefer?
That is correct.
All right. Representative Keel moves the 1027 DE-1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Keel, to your bill as amended.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House File 1027 renews a limited levy authority for the Board of the Northwest Minnesota Multi-County HRA. This authority comes into play upon the approval of two-thirds majority vote of the HRA board. The board members are appointed by the county boards, and the HRA board members can be county commissioners. This limited levy authority was authorized 5 years ago to ensure that there would be at least a base level of levy revenue available to serve the HRA needs of each of these counties. Even if one of the counties determined for some reason that they didn't want to approve their portion of the levy, this is important because the HRA has facilities in all of the participating counties, and if a particular county refused to approve their levy, the HRA would still be obliged to operate the facilities within their jurisdiction. They just wouldn't have the resources to do it. Obviously, this is not taken lightly. The Northwest Minnesota Multi-County HRA has been working diligently to keep all of the counties on board and have succeeded in doing so. I have letters in my possession from all of the counties indicating their support of this measure. In renewing this authority, it also retains the sunset provision requiring the multi-housing HRA to come back to the legislature and again in 5 years. To renew the authority. So in light of that, I wanted to have you hear from the gentlemen that do this and work with it. We have with us today Lee Meyer. What is your name again? No, excuse me. He was my son's tennis coach. Mr. Meyer runs the Minnesota Northwest Multi-Housing Authority. And then... thank you. Mark Finstead is on the board there. So I would like you to hear from them.
Excellent. Mr. Finstead, Mr. Meyer, who goes first?
I'll go first.
All right, sir. If you'd welcome to the committee, if you'd give your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is Lee Meyer, and I'm the executive director with the Northwest Minnesota Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. It's really a mouthful, but... the reason we're here for this is to kind of give you an update of like how successful that levy was that was passed in 2008, and it kind of shows too, like Representative Keel had mentioned, that all six counties approved for us to go forward with this and support this legislation. And in addition to that, we had from private companies and other cities and individuals supporting this also. Over the last 5 years, first of all, there's six board members. There's six counties, and each county board appoints one member to the HRA board. Currently, we have two county commissioners serving on the HRA board, and then four non-commissioners. And it represents business, the public entity, and so we have private and public on the board. The levy, Representative Keel mentioned, that takes two-thirds of the HRA board to pass the levy request every year. And we also meet with all the county boards every year to let them know what we do, what we've done, and ask, see if there's any recommendations they have of how we could work with them, with the housing or any other kind of issues that they might have. In the past 4 years now, we've 25%, we collected a little over $950,000 in levy. And that the usage of the levy covers grant writing, with the cutback of federal and state funding, this gives us ability to use this for leverage dollars when going for applications, which is huge when the different organizations like DEED and Minnesota Housing Finance. It also covers, we've done some community projects where they need a little extra incentive. For example, I'll just give you one example, Winoska, which is a little community. They want to build a community center. They had a private fundraising, but they needed an extra $10,000, and we were able to assist them with their community center. So it's projects like that, and Mark will cover some more on that in a little bit. And then also it helps us cover some of the administrative fees, costs, the developer's costs for my time that I can go out in various communities and then work with them on housing development and housing issues and pull it all together. So the return on investment the past 4 years has been about $7 to 1, and which is pretty substantial. And obviously, by all the support that we receive, they understand the benefit of the housing authority. They understand the benefit of the levy, and they've come to. We had a few people originally to oppose it, and actually the person that was the most in opposition made the motion to support this in this last round. So that was a positive. And we met, we met with all the county commissioners and other groups to present the levy and what we're going to do and what we're intending to do down the road, and the impact that it has. And I think some of the reasons that the businesses like Polaris and so forth have supported it because the HRA has, I think, a stellar reputation of using tax dollars and creating housing opportunities in the region and Northwest region. We assist about 750 households with Section 8 in public housing, and we have operated a successful down payment assistance program. We've made a little over 850 loans, so we do quite a variety, and we have almost 9,000 square miles, under 125,000 people, so it's very rural. And so I think the impact that we have in the area, it just really benefits that. And then also a few weeks ago, the governor and the commissioners of DEED and also MHFA were up in Roseau, East Grand Forks area, and to meet with the leaders. And what was really expressed by the businesses in that area was the shortage of houses, workforce housing, and the need for that. And so I think moving forward, not only will we continue to do what we've been doing with the levy dollars, but these levy dollars will help greatly to generate the different leverage to help with these housing struggles that they're having. And there's new flyer, I'm just trying to list a few of them, but DigiKey, American Crystal, Articad, Marvin Windows, and then plus there's a lot of smaller businesses too that have 20, 25 employees that they have housing needs. So that's our main purpose, and over the next 5 years, that's our main goal, is to continue working with all these communities and businesses to create workforce housing and other housing help with housing rehab for low income, and just try to have these dollars put into the leverage package when we apply for funds that gives us a little foot up, because the state and other funders are looking for other sources of income, and it's harder and harder to find other sources. As the state knows, you know, there's been a little more struggles as far as funding goes. So that's kind of my quick overview, and I know you guys got tons of stuff to go through, so we don't want to spend too much time. But I'm going to turn it over to our vice chair and let him cover it, and then see if there's any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Mr. Finstead, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Keel, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Mark Finstead. I represent Polk County on the HRA board and also serve on both the Fauston and Winger Economic Development Authority boards. My employer, Ultima Bank Minnesota, has branches in both of these communities. Through my role at the HRA and my volunteer work on these two EDAs, I can testify from personal experience the significant and lasting impact the HRA levy funds have had in these small northwest Minnesota towns. In addition to the HRA's housing programs, both towns have benefited from small cities block grants that were administered by the HRA to revitalize both housing stock and small businesses. Many of these projects would not have been completed without funding from the levy and the small cities program. Many small communities in northwest Minnesota do not have the public resources to either write grants or hire professionals to do the grant writing for them. We have repeatedly used levy funds to help leverage these vital programs, both in competing for funding and providing professional administration of the projects. Winger is a town of just over 200 and had the lowest per capita income of any community in Polk County according to the 2000 census. Through a unique combination of private and public funding and a lot of volunteer work, we have revitalized most of the town's businesses and several of its residences. Blighted buildings have been removed and the Highway 59 business corridor is almost completely renovated. What had been a community on the decline is now visually and in reality coming back very strong. The availability of human and financial resources through the HRA made much of this turnaround possible. The Fauston community, while larger and more prosperous, has benefited in similar fashion, with numerous homes and businesses revitalized with the help of the HRA and its levy funding. The ability to leverage private and public funding has been and continues to be a catalyst for development and revitalization in our small communities. It encourages volunteer leaders like myself and helps them to raise the private funding needed in most projects. In fact, investment and improvement is contagious. Now, we have seen many, many totally private projects happen because of the general investment that is going on in our communities. I ask your support in renewing the HRA's levy authority for another 5 years, and as a community leader, I commit that the funding will continue to be used with care and to serve its intended purposes. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions I could on how we use the funding in the communities that I work in.
Thank you, Mr. Finstead. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 1027? Ms. Schill, you had some updated information related to the DE1 amendment.
Right. Mr. Chair and members, I do have updated information, and at this time, I'm not sure that it's correct.
Okay.
First of all, the DE1 amendment narrowed the focus of this bill to just the Northwest Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority, so the Southwest that was in the original bill is no longer there. That makes a difference.
Southeast.
And then secondly, I do have numbers associated with the levy, if it's in addition to the levy amount that is proposed, that you have already. And I don't think that's the case. Conversation with Mr. Hines makes me think that the levy amount, when you don't need approval of your governing board, is within the levy amount that you have. So I need to do some checking, Mr.
Okay.
Chair, and
right.
get clarification on what the impact of this bill is.
So right now the message for committee members and the public is that the revenue note provided is no longer accurate because the DE1 amendment withdrew the Southeast
Correct.
Folks. So it will be something it different would be than what it is.
Something less. The numbers that I have right now look like $35,000 a year of a potential impact, but I'm even questioning that it would be that much.
Mr. Meyer, did you want to respond at all?
Well, this is what it is for the two. Okay, for the both. You know, I can't, I guess I don't know on that. All I know is that in the past, that 25% of the maximum levy, the county could still levy the other 75%. But as far as, that's on the levy on the market rate, I mean the market. So there's 100% levy that the county could levy. What this does is the HRA board now can levy up to 25% of the maximum. So, and then after the levy is made by our HRA board with the two-thirds vote or greater, and up to now it's always been 100% vote, then we go back to each of the county boards and explain what the levy is, what we plan on doing, and then report to them again on what was done.
Ms. Schill.
So, Mr. Chair and members, given that scenario that the amount that could be done without approval of the governing bodies is a subset of what they already have. Mm-hmm. So the cost, there would not be a cost. There would not be a change. Therefore, it would not impact property tax refunds or income tax interactions as what is listed on the note. That cost would be zero. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the best kind of impact to have, I think.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yes, Jerry and the legislator, that's
Mr. Meyer.
There's a carry forward, so there's no additional. It's just a continuation of the current legislation is what we're looking for.
So all we're really looking at, Mr. Meyer, is an extension of the authority that you already have.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Keel, did you... No? All right. If there is no one else wishing to testify, Representative Keel, closing comments.
Well, I thank the committee very much for hearing this and wanted to tell you that it's a very good program. There's a lot of successes in a very large area of our rural district and helps people to be housed because housing in our area is very, very tight, very difficult to purchase housing and or rent. So,
all right.
Thank you.
With that, Representative Keel renews her motion that House File 1027 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And Representative Keel, would you like to move House File 1303?
I would. Thank you very much. Thank you. You can go.
Gentlemen, safe travels back.
Thank you.
Representative Keel, would you like to move House File 1303 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus report? The division report. There we go. That's what I meant to say.
There we go. Yes.
All right.
I would appreciate that. Yes.
Thank you very much. Representative Keel, to your bill.
Members, this is a proposal that was written up when there was a flood up in Marshall County, basically, is what happened. And there were members that live along, a very few now, but they all lived along the Red River of the North and where their yards were flooded out. And Representative Leader, my predecessor at the time, brought this bill forward and provided these rural members with continuation on their agriculture homestead credit, even though they were not residing in their yards anymore, their homestead area. They had to move out. And rather than have them rebuild right on the river, they moved into, a lot of them are senior members, and they've just moved into their communities in the area. And so this allows them to continue their agriculture homestead credit without reconstructing. And I believe the wish is that they not reconstruct there because we've had to help them a couple of times with flood issues. And my understanding from the Marshall County assessor is this is a handful of farmers. This doesn't extend if they were to pass the land on to a family member or someone to purchase it. They wouldn't get that right. They would have to have their homestead credit right there. I'm trying to think what else. And then and the special ag credit is a 50-mile radius rather than a township radius. That would be the difference. So I'm asking to renew this, but I'm also asking, instead of a date, to just let it be from the 2010, which it has been in existence, to just forever. According to my
does it terminate at death at least?
Yeah, really, just forever. But I don't think these people will exist forever either. So, and that's according to my assessors, is that this is probably just a handful of growers. So,
all right, Representative Keel, just to help me understand. Mm-hmm. So, I was living on the farm. I homesteaded the home there. Mm-hmm. I then got flooded out. I've now moved someplace else. Have I homesteaded that property as well?
No, I believe the wording. When I read the wording, you know, I didn't ask him that, but my understanding is that this is their homestead. They have to be in that county within the 50-mile radius. Then their home, some of these homes were actually moved, physically moved into a community away from that flooded yard. In fact, he told me they just moved a house the other day, and the owner, the spouse, the husband has just passed away, and they were just able to move the house, and so she will live in that house. So that will be your homestead, but it extends to, as you know, in agriculture, it extends to the property that you farm as mm-hmm. well as your house and 1 acre. So
all right,
I don't believe they own two houses. And have homestead on both.
All right. That was helpful. So, thank you, Representative Keel. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 1303? Representative Lincheski.
Oh, I was just going to ask. I think Representative Marquardt passed this before.
Oh.
For the 2 year.
Excuse me.
And it's Representative Leader's bill, okay. But I think Representative Marquardt put it in law in the tax committee, conference committee. And I'm trying to remember, can you just tell us about how many people this is, about how many homes this is?
My understanding from the Marshall County assessors, we're talking five. Okay. Five, maybe six.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or six, maybe five, based on the latest information.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Correct.
Are they 25 years old, or?
No.
How many years are we going to pay people's property taxes?
Representative Keel?
All of them are retired. Thereabouts in their retirement years. Probably farming, sort of, with either sons or, you know, probably family members that they're. Well, I didn't ask detail of all of them, but I know a couple of the sons were farming land. So,
Mr. Chair, because I think it'd be very difficult in 50 years for legislators to understand this piece of legislation.
I think it would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I asked the Marshall County Assessor, how long do you think this should be in existence? And I said, I'm guessing we should remove this at some point because they are not encouraging anyone to build in those areas to begin with. So.
Right. Mr. Hines, can you help us, please?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to point out that we already have a number of clauses in statute that do this in other places. We have one for the 97 flooding in Polk Clay Kitson. We have it for the tornado in 98 in Blue Earth Brown Cottonwood. We have a few of these. There's another one for in Dodge Fillmore Houston, that's 2007 flood. So we've done this a number of times. This was unusual in that the other times were all just permanent. You couldn't live there anymore because of the flood, so you could still own the property and homestead it. This was an oddity in that this one had a sunset on it, and I think it was more of an oversight than anything that it was put in that way, because logically it didn't make sense compared to the other ones. So.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hines. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, just so I understand, you kind of perked my curiosity, Mr. Chairman, when you said that they had just moved the house. So can you homestead just the acre?
Representative Keel.
As a farmer, you have what is called and tax people can probably correct me on this, but you have a special ag homestead credit in that if you live, in my case, if I live within the four townships of my home, or I farm within the four townships of my home, my homestead credit is extended to all that property. It's called a special ag homestead credit. So you pay probably a little more than you would if you had a home and the homestead credit, but it decreases it by about half.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, I'm just trying to reason this through. I saw, going back to your example, you said that the woman was now widowed and she moved the house somewhere. So there wouldn't be a house on the land any longer. So you would still be qualifying even though there wasn't a building. Because my recollection was that it's the home and the acre surrounding the home and the garage and all of that. Yeah, that actually passed when I was on the tax committee in 73. When we kind of defined it that way. So I was just curious if once you've basically abandoned any dwelling on the land, if you were still getting the homestead, and I think you're saying you would.
Mr. Hines, can you jump in here?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that's exactly right, that in this case, these farmers would be allowed to have homestead classification on the land, even though they're no longer living on it. But as Representative Keel is kind of addressing, we also have a provision now where anybody who owns land, who has a home that's separate from their land within a certain radius of four townships, can get ag homestead classification on that land already. So this isn't even too big a deviation from that. It's just extending the four township rule really to 50-mile rule in this situation. But the laws regarding ag homestead are very complicated, and nobody's too happy with them, I think. So,
Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I just learned another aspect of the homestead. Thank you.
Right.
You are correct. It is complicated. So my county tells me that because of the changes in agriculture or the changes of property tax, that Polk alone will see most of its property tax receipts from agriculture now again, which is why it got changed to a house and 1 acre in the past. I don't remember what year, but another conversation. So I will renew my motion.
All right. With that, Representative Keel renews her motion that House File 1303 be held over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you, Representative Keel. Ladies and gentlemen, the last bill on the agenda is House File 613. That was remarkable.
Flying in.
The handoff occurred. Representative Hansen. Representative Mahoney, would you like to move House File 613 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report? Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Hansen, on the fly, take a deep breath. To your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have, if the pages could hand out, a little housekeeping. We had some heartburn in the previous committee over a section, and if we could get the bill into the shape I would like before we consider, that would be helpful.
So there's an amendment, Representative Hansen? Excellent.
And if I could have someone move that, that would be... Ms. Dyson prepared
Mr. Chair.
This on the
Mr. Chair?
We'll just wait until the amendment has been distributed, if we can take just a second. Representative Mahoney, I'm sorry.
I was going to move the amendment if...
Please do.
I'll move the... there's no number on the amendment, but it is the... Do I need to, like, put A1 on the top of it?
How should we proceed? The handwritten amendment, Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, that's what I would refer to it as. Otherwise, you could just... Everyone could handwrite in something right now if we all agree on what it should be.
Mr. Chair, I will move the handwritten amendment that was handed out at 5:05.
H613 505 amendment, is that?
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So, Representative Mahoney moves the 613-505 amendment. Representative Hansen, you've identified this as an author's amendment to get the bill in the form that you prefer. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Hansen, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a mini omnibus soil and water district, Board of Water and Soil Resources bill, and the provision that's included that brings it here is on tax levy authority. And I have with me Mr. John Jashke, who is the Executive Director of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, to walk us through that portion of the bill.
Mr. Jashke, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Jashke, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about this section, Section 4, and this is just an iota of a technical amendment the way we presented it earlier in the session. This statute has been in place since 1987. This provision that talks about a water implementation tax was put in law in 1987, and it prescribes that a county, in this case, in order to get a state grant, which currently is in the amount of about $19,000, was to levy a local tax to match that state grant. Last year in statute, and there was a very prescriptive levy amount that had to do with tax capacity for that county, and so it was a formula. And counties came to us over the years and said, you know, we are happy to do the match, but we've got other revenue sources that we may want to use to suffice to match that state grant. Some of them had revenue from timber. Some of them had fee revenue. Some of them had a variety of things. And so they wanted to be able to use either this tax if they needed it or another source. And that was amended, you can see in line 2.16, that other local source was included in legislation last year. It was 100% consensus legislation. What happened then is, if you look on line 2.18, when it says board here on 2.18, that's the state board, the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We do not establish levies or rates. That is a local jurisdiction's responsibility. We simply say how much funding you will need from a local source to match the state grant. And so it's just a technical correction to make sure that it reads the way it actually works. And that is that the state board sets an amount that is required for the match, the local jurisdiction through either this water implementation tax or another source comes up with that amount to get the state grant.
Right. Could you please identify the I'm looking at line page 2, line 31, the fee authorized in section 40A.152. What is that fee? Can you just speak to that?
Sure. Please? Mr. Chairman, members, this is a fee that in the seven-county metropolitan area, counties collect based on the on a deed registration fee. So when a property is transferred, the deed is transferred, there's a $5 fee currently in law that the counties collect, and they're required to use that for conservation and recreational purposes in their county. This provision would allow the county in the seven county metro area to use that revenue source as another alternative to match the state grant.
All right. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 613? Questions from members? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I understand what the intent is, but I'm confused about how it really works. Because I'm looking under line 2.18. And you said the board on that line is the state soil and water state Bowser board, basically. So the state Bowser board says, hey, the local has to match to this level. And then you talked about how they could use fees or other revenues to meet that. But as I read the wording before that, it's at the end of line 2.17, it says must be levied. So to me, there's no flexibility. It says that you must levy that. It isn't levy the amount not covered by, you know, the fees down on 2.31 or other revenue sources from timber sales or whatever. And so I'm just not sure if it really does what you think, or am I confused?
Mr. Jashke.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Loeffler, the way I was reading it and we were reading it was that it's optional whether they have this tax. If they do have the tax, then they have to generate enough to get the level that the board says is required to get the state grant. So if the state grant is $20,000 and it requires a $20,000 match, they would have to come up with $20,000. If they do it through other sources than a tax, then That's their decision. If they do it through a tax, they have to levy it at a rate to generate $20,000.
Mr. Jeschke, does that go to the on 2.17 that a county intends to use? Is that where the county has the option?
Mr. Chairman, yes, and also in the first sentence it says that a base map grant may be awarded to a county that provides a match utilizing a tax or another source, so they have the choice of which source to use. But if they use the tax, then it has to be sufficient to match the state, the non-state portion.
All right, thank you. Representative Loeffler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think our staff can kind of ponder the wording here a little bit as we put together our final bill, because it just feels like we could wordsmith it and just make it clear that the net, so that cumulatively non-tax and tax sources equal the minimum required or something like that.
All right, thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Hansen, any closing comments?
I would note that Mr. Hines is smiling, so
okay.
That, you know, if he has some thoughts while he's smiling there, I would entertain them.
Mr. Hines, any is that smile applicable to House File 613 or?
Mr. Chair, sadly it is. Ms. Dalton and I were conferring, so implicate her too. We were just wondering why you wouldn't want to also allow part of it to be covered by the fee and part of it to be covered by a tax, or what, you know, not knowing the substance of the matter, maybe it is clear, but it wasn't clear to us why you wouldn't also want to allow that possibility. And then I think what Representative Loeffler is worried about is could you double up or impose the tax and the fee, and that sort of in the same realm of issue.
Yeah.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually was looking at the same issue of could you combine the two and have part and part.
Mr. Jeschke or Representative Hansen, you want to respond to that?
I think, you know, that would be fine. I think, you know, it was a simplicity issue. If you're given the amount that you're generating here, which is, again, on the order of $19,000 to $20,000 currently, having a, if you're going to do a specific tax for that, you have to identify it and go track it all the way through. If you're going to do it in part, that would be acceptable to us, certainly. And I'm sure the counties wouldn't have a problem with that either. But at this point, it hadn't thought to have been needed. It was one or the other, but a combination would be acceptable, I'm sure, as well. So if you want to work on that, we would certainly be fine with it.
Okay. Representative Hertoff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This conservation fee has been imposed on real estate transactions for quite a long time, and it certainly was sold and marketed with public support on the idea that it was going towards conservation. And you could argue, I guess, that improving water quality falls within the purview of that. But I'm a little concerned that repurposing the money is kind of a misrepresentation to the folks when you go to a closing and you think you're saving a piece of land or you're conserving some piece of land. And so if there's really a repurposing of the money, I think there should also require a different identification or a disclosure on those HUD statements and settlement statements as to what the money's really being used for now.
Mr. Jeschke,
Mr. Representative, this does not repurpose the money. It simply says the county money they collect here can be used to match and get a county money they collect here can be used to match and get a state grant. So its purpose is not being changed in this legislation. The ability to count it as match to get a state grant is being allowed, where previously wasn't. It was only this water implementation tax that was allowed to be the match. So it gives the county another option to, you know, seek a state grant.
Mr. Jeschke, would it be fair to speculate that in the metro area where this fee is collected, the counties are collecting more than $20,000 a year in this fee?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a fair speculation. I don't have the data, but I think that's fair speculation, yes.
Representative Hertoff?
Well, whatever money divisible by $5 would count as a number of transactions. So, you know, as we reflect on metro area real estate sales, you know, typically in the resale market, in a good market, there's maybe 40 or 50,000 transactions. You know, that would be a sizably larger number of money. Of course, we're not seeing that right now, and transactions are significantly less.
Ms. Schill.
Mr. Chair and members, the fee authorized in section 48.152, I did a little bit of background checking before coming to committee. It's currently being used by 10 counties of the state, and not only in the metro: Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, Washington, Waseca, Winona, and Wright counties.
All right, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, if I can help.
Please.
My Representative Hurtis's concern. Part of the grants that we're talking about here may be the legacy, clean water legacy grants, which require for implementing water quality or soil water conservation practices a local match. So using those local dollars to help bring those dollars into the metro area so the soil and water district or the watershed district can use, or the county, if Representative Loeffler's bill passes, if the county is implementing those practices, then they could use that to help leverage those clean water grants.
All right. Representative Marquardt, sorry.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, the testifier, is this increasing levy authority? And I mean, is this authorizing an increased levy over what currently is allowed by law? Like, I know the watershed districts are limited to a certain amount of market value and a certain tax rate percent. Would this result in increased property taxes over and above what is currently allowed right now?
Mr. Jashke.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, no, this authority has existed since 1987, I believe, at the county level.
Representative Marquardt?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. You know, on subdivision 2, lines 2.9 through 2.13, it said that it could pay the reasonable cost and then, or a comprehensive watershed management plan. So, is this going to be extra duties, extra things to pay for? I don't quite understand that part.
Representative Hansen or Mr. Jashke.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, this language is not changing the amount or the authority of a county, in this case a county board only, to exercise this levy. This authority exists. This change is simply correcting the description of how this works, because it was incorrectly drafted or passed actually last year. The rate is established by the local jurisdiction, the county. The state, our board, says, and sometimes legislation says, thou shalt provide a certain amount to match a state grant. This simply says that if that requirement is there, then the county decides what the rate's going to be to get to this number that the state's requiring as the match amount. So, okay, by using my $20,000 example, we don't know what the rate's going to be. That's the local jurisdiction's decision. We simply say that you have to come up with $20,000 to get $20,000, let's say, and then they can figure out how to get it.
Representative Marquardt?
Thank you very much. That
all right.
Did clarify it. Thank you.
With that, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, the path was to leave here, or was it to be held over? I see that we've got...
My understanding was to be held over.
Okay.
All right. Any last comments, Representative Hansen, besides that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you very much. With that, Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 613, as amended, be held over, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Ladies and gentlemen, with that, we are adjourned. Thank you very much.